This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. For some kids, forming letters with their tongues is not as easy as it sounds, but a new speech therapy that helps them see the vocal process is showing promise. That's coming up on Focus and Technology later in the show. But first, we all know the environmental importance of trees, and most homeowners realize they have a significant intrinsic worth as well. The right tree in the proper setting can define a landscape and add significantly to a home's resale value. This is the perfect time of year to plant or relocate trees, but picking, positioning, and planting a tree takes some careful thought and planning. Here to offer advice on choosing and caring for your trees and to answer your winter gardening questions are Peter Huttinger, property manager at Home Meadow Song Farm, Campbell County Horticultural Extension agent David Kester, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturist Scott Berline. Scott's also the chairman of the Taking Root Tree Planting Campaign. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Thanks for joining me this afternoon, everybody.
Thank you.
Scott, tell us a little bit about the tree planting campaign, Taking Root. That sounds pretty interesting.
The major idea, or the main goal, is to plant 2 million trees by 2020.
2 million trees? Wow.
Yeah, we might have been a little overambitious on that goal, but we're going to go for it. It's basically one tree for every person in the 8-county tri-state. So put that way, it seems a little bit more possible.
It does indeed, if you put it that way.
Yeah.
And what kind of response have you been getting to the campaign?
A tremendous response. So we're just entering our second year from our launch. We had a summit last January at the zoo, brought in over 300 people. The resonance among the community has been outstanding. The enthusiasm, the energy is pretty much unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do people find out about this?
We have a website, takingroot.info, and we're on Facebook, Taking Root 2020. We're having another summit, or second, coming up January 31st at the zoo. And if you want to come, sign up and come out. We haven't got registration open yet, but we will have it probably starting around December.
So you're shooting for 2 million. Any idea how many so far?
We have roughly 60,000 registered.
So that's a great start.
It's a decent start. We know a lot more trees are getting planted than that. The registration process is something we might have to refine, may have to come up with another way of measuring. But ideally, people learn about the registration process, which is simple. It's online on our website. When you plant a tree, register it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. David, what should people be thinking about? And Peter, what should people be thinking about this time of year as we're heading into winter? What are some of the things they need to do to get their yards and their plants and their trees ready?
Well, this cold snap and the snow that we got is really early for us in this area, and may have caught some of us by a surprise and our plants a little bit. We generally have a kind of a mild fall that acclimates our plants to get ready for winter, and it came pretty quick this year. So we've got some trees out there that still had some foliage on them. With this snow, you could see some limb breakage and things like that, especially on our pear trees and some of our more weak-wooded trees. And then, of course, any trees that have some hollow wood in them or some cavities could definitely be ones that you want to be watchful of.
Peter, what's your advice for this time?
I think also to remember, mulching things as we move through. Like, again, a lot of us got caught off guard with this snow, but as soon as it melts back, the snow itself has insulation properties. So when that melts down, then you can still don't give up. Just go in and do your mulching then.
Any idea how much damage might have been done by today's storm?
I haven't really heard. You just want to be careful with some of these things, because we do have a lot of weak-wooded trees out there and some trees that maybe were pruned improperly in the past, and some of those are definitely more prone to limb breakage. So you want to be on the lookout for that.
Now, as far as things to do for the lawn, I guess, are we past the point where you should even be cutting your lawn anymore?
Well, obviously, you're not going to be out there today.
Not today, but
I really think that we want our lawns going into the winter cut. And I think if we get some warm temperatures and your lawn is over 3 inches in height, I would definitely go ahead and cut it again. Not a bad idea at all. We like our lawns going into the winter and through the winter short. So definitely cut it one more time if it needs it.
And if you have a mulching mower, as Peter was saying, get things mulched up this time of year.
That's right, exactly.
Including those leaves.
Yeah,
because we just run over the leaves and kind of rake them aside into the beds. So it's, you don't have to go, you know, don't go out and buy mulch, just use what you have.
And leaves are natural fertilizer anyhow, right? When you get them mulched up.
Yeah,
and
they mulch up, yeah.
And they start to decompose.
The smaller they are, the quicker they'll rot. So right. Chop them up and leave them.
Yeah, that's one thing to think about when you're, even if you're adding them to a compost pile, like the larger leaves, say a larger leaf like a sycamore, you have to be careful if you're using those as mulch. It can, when they layer down, they become almost like shingles in a roof. And so it's very hard for anything to penetrate. Now, if you want to use those to suppress weeds, you know, that could be desirable to a certain degree. But if you've got, you know, crocuses or different things you want to see come up in the spring, you know, you want to avoid that. Make sure whatever you put on is shredded or chopped up.
What about aerating and overseeding a lawn this time of year?
Way too late, I probably wouldn't do either one, but I definitely would not be reseeding it now. If it's always that old wives' tale of throwing seed on top of snow, and that might work in February or March, but it certainly isn't going to do you any good, and you'd just be wasting your seed by putting it out now.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. Brian tweeted us a question. He wanted to know what should you consider when you're picking a tree for between a street and a sidewalk?
Toughness, for one, salt tolerance. You know, that's probably one of the more desirable places to put a tree, but also one of the hardest places to grow one. So, you know, especially if you're on a major artery, you're looking for things like Zelkova or elms, really tough trees that have a branching pattern that don't interfere with traffic. If you're on a side street, you probably have some more options. You know, it's a very complex question, actually, because it depends on your soil. Some people actually have decent soil in that location. Most people don't. Most people around here have neutral or slightly basic soil, so you need to keep that in mind. Ultimately, you're looking at, you know, wires, so you want to make sure you stay under or around the wires, and, you know, usually a fairly small area to grow in. So you got to keep all that in mind. Best advice I can say is drive around and look at other places with similar locations and see what's growing successfully for them. There's some good websites out there that can direct you to the right tree. Plantplaces.com is a decent one that's locally based that shows you, you know, what trees do well here, and also what they look like. A lot of photographs there to give you an idea. But, you know, that's just not an easy question to just say, oh, use this. Part of the equation is, I don't want to give a list of five favorites anyway. We really want to promote diversity and try to get some trees that would work in those situations a chance that don't get commonly planted. You know, looking at the ash borer situation, it's eliminating all the ash. It's a perfect example of why you don't want to go in with just a handful of different named trees for those type of situations. You know, it kind of subjects you to whatever the next ash borer would be, maybe.
Any advice, David?
Well, we're seeing, you know, we've got a lot of cities that are now doing tree inventories, and they're finding that they've just got an overabundance of maples, and they've got an overabundance of honey locust. And, you know, as Scott said, when you load up on one tree and you get something like the elm, you know, the Dutch elm disease, or you get the ash borer that comes in and it wipes out a great percentage of the trees. I grew up in Glenview, Illinois, and we had nothing but elm trees, American elms, on our between the sidewalk and the street. And of course, the devastating Dutch elm disease came through, and all of a sudden all we had were stumps left, and had to replant. And that's why we really want to see people diversify in these cities, no more than maybe 30% of one, such as maples in a city. And so, you know, mix that planting up.
Peter, what advice do you have?
Well, one thing I know, there's a lot of interest in edible landscaping now, which I think is a really good thing. But planting in that strip, some people call it the no man's land, you may want to not consider planting anything that's fruit bearing because of litter and different things like that. And also, it's much more, you know, if it's over someone's parked car, you have apples or pears growing on top of it. It makes it a little bit harder to take care of. But, you know, moving away from the street into the yard, I think that, you know, size and canopy is a real important thing to consider because you want the, you know, shade and different kinds of coverage, but also to be very aware of how close you put it to your house. There's so many times I see like a blue spruce pine, you know, like a blue spruce, you know, like planted 6 feet from a house, you know, and when it's, you know, 6 feet tall, it might make sense, but these are trees that get very large. So when you do pick out a tree, you know, research a tree, find out what the height and also really important to find out, you know, how wide the drip line will be.
Yeah, your spruces and some of your evergreens have that very wide base.
Right.
So playing them at narrow spots, not too good of an idea, is it?
Right. And if you limb them up, I mean, a lot of trees, if you limb them up, they can be quite beautiful. A pine tree looks pretty dumb.
We went through that period where everybody was planting a river birch right on the corner of the house, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes a foot off or 2 feet off. And we're just now discovering how big river birches are capable of getting, and it's causing some problems.
Yeah, speaking of planting things close to the house, this is a personal question on my part. I have a Japanese maple that I got a couple of years ago, and I planted it close to the front of my house in a garden area. And it hasn't died, but it just doesn't quite seem like it's grown much or that it's thriving. And I'm kind of wondering if there's something I can do to help that Japanese maple along, especially at this time of year.
This time of year, this is not a bad time of year to fertilize plants, but I don't know whether it's, you know, it's root bound, if it has enough area for the roots to spread out. You might want to mulch it, of course, eliminate any kind of competition beneath it, the limbs, and a light application of fertilizer this time of year is not a bad idea.
A lot of the Japanese maples, especially the lace leaf types, are very slow growers anyway. So maybe it's
might be fine anyhow.
Yeah, it's just putting on a few inches a year.
That's a tree that's probably only going to get to be what, about 8 to 10 feet tall anyway, yeah. if at best.
If it is a lace leaf type, mm-hmm. More than likely it'll stay pretty low. Given 100 years, I've seen 30-foot lace leaf types, but that's not going to be our worry, is it? Now, if it's a palmatum type, you know, with the bigger, broader leaf, those are capable of getting much larger.
We'll continue our conversation about trees and winter gardening and answer your questions after the break. Join the conversation at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and my guest this afternoon as we talk about choosing and caring for trees and winter gardening are Peter Hunninger, property manager at Home Meadow Song Farm, Campbell County Horticultural Extension agent David Kester, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturist Scott Berline. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk with Lori in Clifton. Good afternoon, Lori. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi, yes. Thank you for taking my call. I'm going pretty major construction to my house starting in late December, early January. And I have a lovely dogwood that's kind of small, but I also have about a dozen huge hostas that are going to be lost. And I know they're not trees, but I'm wondering if it's too late to possibly move them now.
Okay. Any advice for Lori?
What do you have? What's the harm in trying, at least?
Yeah, I would sure try to move the hostas now. I think, obviously, you know, it's so early to have this kind of cold, and I would think that give it a week or so, and maybe we'll be above freezing, the ground isn't frozen, and get those hostas out of there. One of the things you might want to do is mark where they are so that should all the foliage evaporate and decay, you know where to dig, and you also might in advance determine where they're going to go and move those, be ready to act quickly when the conditions are right.
Yeah, just be sure to plant at the same depth, try to keep that in mind. I was given hostas one time in the middle of summer, dug up bare root, two big grocery bags of them. They rolled around in the back of my truck for a couple days. And finally got them in the ground. It was a hot summer and dry, and they all lived. I didn't lose a single one. So the toughness of hostas is legendary. But, of course, this is a different situation with winter. But give it a shot.
She had a question about a dogwood, too, I believe. about moving the dogwood. And
yes.
That, you know, a lot of the nurserymen, local nurserymen, do not guarantee dogwoods. And I think if it has to be moved, I would sure try to do it with as big a root ball as you possibly can. And again, as Scott said, you know, same depth that's currently growing, be ready to get that tree out of the ground and back in the ground as quick as you can.
Okay, I will do my best to save them all. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Lori. We appreciate the question. 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. Of course, with the weather that we're having today, anybody have any ideas on yard-safe ice and snow treatments? In other words, you know, put it on your sidewalk, put it on your driveway, but you don't want it to affect the your lawn, your plants, your trees, right?
The safest one is a good back, you know, good workout shoveling. And that's the only one I'm really comfortable with. There's other products out there. You know, whether they're salt or not, they can tie up nutrients. I try to keep it to an absolute minimum. At the zoo, we this morning, for instance, we basically brushed off all the snow as much as we could and only used salt as a last resort.
Now, salt is extremely toxic to any plant. Calcium chloride is one. There are things that are a little bit safer than the salt, a lot safer for plants. But really, you've got to be careful. Anytime that you accumulate that material, and if you put it down and then you shovel the snow, you've accumulated all that into one area, and that's usually at the base of a tree. And that can really – you'll see the effects come next May or so when it leaves out.
Yeah, really. I mean, they really kind of covered everything. I mean, the trick is don't use any more than you have to. And a lot of times when you get a fresh snow, I mean, really, it's amazing what you can do with like a stiff warehouse broom.
Yeah, that's what my father always used. It was just a good wide broom and pushed all the snow aside and never had to. He had a gravel driveway, of course, so he had to do that by necessity. But he never had to use salt, never had to use a shovel very much. So it works very well. That's a good tip. John called, and Scott, he was wondering the name of the website that you mentioned earlier, the tree website.
Well, there's takingroot.info, and there's also plantplaces.com.
Okay. And also, he was talking about what are some safe elm tree varieties, since Dutch elm disease is so prevalent.
What I keep hearing a lot is Patriot is a good choice. Jefferson.
There's a lot of them on their website, they have Dick Ammon did a lot of research, and he planted a lot of them and is a good source. And then, of course, the lacebark elm, it's not really it's a little bit different tree, but it's a great tree for our area, and it is resistant. Actually, I think it's immune to Dutch elm disease.
Well, one thing with that right now is if you can find it in a nursery, it's likely to be almost guaranteed to be one of the resistant types. Nobody's carrying anything but the better types.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. Let's talk with Bill in Norwood. Good afternoon, Bill. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Oh, yes. Interesting topic. You guys were talking a little bit about Japanese maple.
Yes.
I think I lost two of them this year of different varieties, and one of them that came back in the spring, it looks like only a fourth of it came back. And is it totally gone? Just need to dig it up and start over? Or?
Yeah, last winter was pushing the boundaries on the hardiness for Japanese maples, and then I think we had a pretty good late frost, which is hard on them as well. I've had a Japanese maple where it died back to about a fifth of its size, and with judicious pruning, it came back ultimately to look pretty good. I guess the decision you got to make on that type of plant is, you know, if it dies back to a fifth of its size and you prune it and it grows back again, you know, is the same thing going to happen again when it starts to look good again? You know, it's a tough call. There's other things out there that can take out Japanese maples besides cold and frost. So it might take a little bit more diagnosis of what exactly is ailing your tree.
I always ask, does it enhance your landscape or does it detract from it? And generally, you know, we can keep a lot of things alive, but we can also renew them and go and buy another plant And I wouldn't hesitate that if it's in that bad a shape to probably sacrifice it and start anew. A lot of good nurseries out there would be glad to sell you a new one.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And Sean sent us a tweet. He said, should I hold on to my fall bulbs that normally go in mid-November?
No. You definitely want to get those in the ground as soon as you can. And if that's in January, do it then. But as soon as you can, you don't want to keep those until next year. If they're spring flowering bulbs, they've got to go in this fall or winter.
513-419-7100. Let's talk with Shelly in Fort Wright. Good afternoon, Shelly. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi, how are y'all?
Great. Thank you.
Good. I have two questions about bushes, but I know you're concentrating on trees, so hopefully you can field those questions.
It's open to winter gardening questions today, Shelly.
Oh, great. I planted some snowberries this summer, and they are not doing so well, and I'm wondering if y'all know anything about them or what could help them out. And I also wondered how far away from the house and pipes should you plant a willow bush?
Help me out with snowberry. Is that there's a type with berries along the stem that are white?
Yes, that's it.
Okay, so a calicarpa most likely. What was the question regarding the calicarpa?
It's not doing very well at all. They just really look kind of sickly. And I think one of them's not even going to make it through the winter, but I just am wondering if maybe they're not hardy for this zone, or I thought they were.
Full sun?
Yes.
Okay. Were they planted this year?
Yes, this past summer, midsummer.
Give them a chance. Let them go through the wintertime, see what they do next spring. You'll probably get some dieback on that. Just cut it back, let the new growth start, and see what happens. That's a pretty tough shrub. I'd be surprised if you would lose it.
Okay, great.
So I kind of think in general also, I mean, it's usually, a lot of people say 3 years before a plant really settles in. You see that particularly with like dwarf and semi-dwarf fruit trees. But I've even seen that with gooseberries and currants. Kind of do all right. Yeah. And they're chugging along, but then the third year, they kind of explode on you.
It's a neat plant. I'd definitely give it some time.
Shelly, thank you for the question. We appreciate it. 513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Karen in Cincinnati. Good afternoon, Karen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. We want to have a live Christmas tree that we can replant. So I guess we have to dig the hole now before the ground freezes. And then right after Christmas, do we put it in the ground then?
I used to be in the nursery business, and I sold an awful lot of live Christmas trees. And I'll be honest with you, we got out of the business because very few of them really made it. And one of the things that you're doing, it sounds like a wonderful idea. It really does. And if you do it, just be aware that the maximum you should keep that plant inside your house is about 7 days. And you are taking a dormant plant. You're breaking the dormancy when you bring it into that condition, a dry, desert-like climate inside your home. And then you're taking it back outside into really cold conditions. And you're doing it in a very short period of time. If you still decide to do it, I would definitely go ahead and dig the hole now. You've got to keep that plant moist, that root ball moist the entire time it's inside, and be aware that it's going to be a very heavy plant. And also when you get it back out, make sure you mulch the root ball. I would be very surprised if anybody will guarantee those plants because of the tough conditions that they have to go through. And I love the idea. It's just that it doesn't work out. And just be aware that Christmas trees are a crop just like corn or soybeans are. There are growers out there who grow them on land that's really not conducive to much else. And it's not environmentally wrong to go ahead and harvest those and use them as a, just you can keep a live cut tree inside your home for 3 to 4 weeks, no problem at all.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Makes sense.
But, you know, another thing to think, I know some people you kind of look at it as a tradition for their family to buy a tree and plant it each year because, you know, the fall is the best time to plant a tree. So, I mean, I even had some friends who got a live pine. They planted it in their yard, actually just put lights on it outside and still made like a little set up for their plants inside the house. So you can think about different creative ways of dealing with that tradition.
Some people will take the live bulb and they'll put it on their porch or on their outdoor deck, and they'll use that. And as long as it's maintained at that temperature, it's the temperature difference when you bring it inside and take it back out. But, you know, if that works for you, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, I was always one of those people who assumed that this was a bad time to plant trees, but it's actually pretty good, isn't it?
Maybe not today or tomorrow.
Yeah, of course not today. The ground has to be the right
condition. As long as the ground, you know, basically for most species, as long as the ground's not frozen, go for it. Fall is a great time, really, better than spring in almost every case. The roots can get established, get out there and expand, and, have a lot of time to acclimate before, say, like a spring planted tree is more than likely or very possibly going to go into a drought fairly shortly after being planted.
So they get more water in the winter?
Well, our winter tends to be pretty moist.
Okay. So keep that in mind.
So I always think late October up through mid-November. I mean, what do you guys think about the best time for a fall planting?
I've planted in December. As long as the ground isn't frozen, I think it's a great time to plant.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. RC sent us a question on Facebook. Is it too late to apply insecticidal drench to maples?
Why are they doing that?
No, he doesn't say just a Facebook comment, so we don't know much beyond that.
I don't know any reason why you would do that, honestly.
Okay.
People are doing that to their ash trees if it warrants it, but if it hasn't been done by now to an ash tree, I would really want an arborist to take a look at it and determine. But I'm like Scott, I can't figure out why.
Can't imagine why you do that for a maple.
For a maple.
Yeah. Same with Peter. Peter's shaking his saying no. Not a good idea.
But talking about using insecticidal soaps and dormant oil sprays and things like that is something to start thinking about now, particularly if you have fruit trees. Because while the trees are still dormant, say like in late February and March is when you want to use these. And these horticultural oils also are organic certified. Essentially, a lot of them are canola oil and maybe some other kind of additives to them. And if anybody has fruit trees, you know, to get out there and do that first spraying and then do using the same product, you dilute it more with water, you do that midsummer, can really really help a lot with a lot of your pests.
And Peter, even if they're not organic growers, mm-hmm. that first one of the dormant oil is even our commercial fruit growers rely on a dormant non-chemical oil for their fruit trees. And it's really good for all of our landscape plants, most of them.
And one nice thing about spraying that too is you can do it, the homeowner can do it with a pump sprayer, and it's not like a toxic chemical. I mean, you want to stand upwind, but it's not something like you're going to kill yourself or poison yourself with. It's a very safe product. It's like a safer soap. It's a very safe product to use.
Let's talk with Robin in Edgewood. Good afternoon, Robin. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, thank you.
Good. So I heard you guys mention earlier something about the river birches being planted too closely to homes, and I'm afraid that we've probably done that. It's beautiful. It's a heritage clump river birch planted about 6 feet from the front corner of our house, and it has certainly taken off. It's about 25 feet tall. There are four trunks, and it's very healthy. It's beautiful. Do we need to cut our losses and get rid of it, though, before it, reaches 40 feet?
I would say not. At 6 feet from the house is probably a little too close, but not so much so that it's going to be a major problem. You might have an arborist take a look at it once in a while to trim back some side branches that might come into contact with your house or your roof. you know, it's one of those things. If you cut it now, it's going to cost you money, and then you have to start over. If you cut it down in 10 years, it will cost a little bit more money and will cause you to have to start over. Also, so, you know, it's one of those personal decisions you need to make. My own decision would be to let it go at this point.
And thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. 513-419-7100. Let's see here. Brent sent us an email. He says, old trees in Norwood go above the power lines. And he says, what ideas do you have for shade trees that can grow tall but spread or be trained around the lines?
Well, you know, there's good examples around town of trees that have been properly pruned around lines and are over. In Mount Washington, there's some beautiful old oak trees that are over the lines. It's going to be a conflict between the homeowners and Duke. Duke is got a huge amount of liability for branches coming down on their lines. And after Ike in, what was that, 2008, mm-hmm. Who can blame, you know, their opinion on that? The best choice, obviously, is to have a better selection of tree near lines. But, you know, I also have a friend of mine that has a pecan, a state champion pecan right on the lines, and they work it out with Duke every year to do their own work and ensure that it's in great health and not going to fall on the lines. So it's a tough one.
Yeah, you might want to contact a local nurseryman and just ask him what, because there's a lot of really nice trees that will mature beneath the power lines, and sometimes that's a better option because it eliminates any kind of pruning that needs to be done by the power company, and it's just a better solution sometimes if we just do not try to plant trees that'll go up into those power lines and have to be pruned.
Yeah, and there are, I mean, like Dave said, there's a lot of dwarf variety trees, you know, smaller trees. I think just you really got to choose the space. And I know there's planting in that space between the road and the sidewalk can be desirable, but if there's wires there, I mean, pull it back to your yard. It'd be, you know.
It's better for the tree.
Yeah, it's better for the tree.
After the break, we'll talk more with our horticulturists about trees and winter gardening. Later in the show, Focus on Technology looks at a promising new type of speech therapy. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We'll take your calls at 513-419-7100. Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guests this afternoon are Peter Huttinger, property manager at Home Meadow Song Farm, Campbell County Horticultural Extension agent David Kester, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturist Scott Berline, as we talk about choosing and caring for trees and winter gardening. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk with Regina in Goshen. Good afternoon, Regina. Regina, you're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi.
Hello. What's your question?
We have three the river birch, one on each perimeter of the house. All of them in the last 8 years have gone to 35 to 45 feet tall. The one at the entrance of the house, however, took the hit from the windstorm about 2 months ago, and it ripped. It's got three branches on it. It just picked it up, twisted it, and threw it up on the porch. So now we're left with this too. So we went ahead and topped the tree off completely and put that black, however you seal it, so that the sap stays in the tree. Will the tree recover?
You did two terrible things there.
Okay.
I hate to tell you that, but topping trees is,
sorry,
is
Regina.
Just, yeah, is just, it never works out. The black sealant, it at best did no harm no good at all, or no harm at least. At worst, maybe it might promote rot. Dave, what do you think here?
I'd look at the tree and just see if it's worth saving. If not, let's remove it. But yeah, you know, I always ask people when they tell me they sealed the tree or they put that on it, if it made them feel better, because it didn't do a thing for the tree. And you know, we sometimes do things thinking that we're helping the tree, but they're not the same as people, and really sealing those things up just doesn't it's has a negative effect for the most part.
I think when we think about, you know, trees for our home, it's different than a protected forest.
Right.
Where, you know, trees falling over and dying is part of the natural cycle. When a tree falls and hits the ground, it decomposes. It's a host for, it's just teeming with life. You know, your yard, you're looking at something you're considered with the aesthetics of it. If you top off a tree, generally it just doesn't look good. And I think as painful it is, sometimes it's better to, you know, take it out, grub it out, and then replant a tree that's appropriate for the site and in the proper location in your yard, so you won't have complications later.
Regina, thank you for the call. Let's talk with Ken in Union. Good afternoon, Ken.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I have a question about the American chestnut. Have they ever found a disease-resistant, developed one, and if they did, where are they available?
You know, that they're still working on that, and I believe it's a 1/16th.
15/16th or 16/17th.
Yeah. American chestnut. And, you know, they've kind of bred it with the Chinese chestnut, which is resistant. But, and they're still working with it. I read a book on the it's a fascinating story. It used to be so important to the people of Appalachia because it fruited every year, regardless of the weather, because it blooms so late. And they would, they would send actual rail cars filled with the American chestnut up to New York for distribution and for, you know, markets up there. It's an incredible tree, an incredible story. And there's a lot of barns in Kentucky that were made out of American chestnut wood. But it's my understanding that there's still a grove in Wisconsin of American chestnut that have not been infected. But they are diligently working on trying to release some of these.
Yeah, there's two groups. You can look for their websites. One is, I think, the American Chestnut Foundation, and the other is something else. But they've been working on this for almost 100 years. It's pretty incredible, the amount of effort and passion that's been put into that. There's good information. You might Google American Chestnut and see what you turn up there.
You know, in Appalachia, you can still see the trunks of these old, old American chestnuts. And every now and then they will send a sucker up from one of those, and it'll last for about 15 years or so. And then it will become infected and die out. But, it was an amazing tree, and, hopefully we'll get it back.
You know, I've planted a couple, and none of them have done well. And I think, like they're saying, it's still really much in an experimental phase. But one thing to remember, these are huge trees.
Massive trees.
Yeah. So if you're planting, just keep that in mind. But I think if you have the space and want to do it, to do some research, and like was said, there's some people experimenting with it, and to get those and to track them and to register them with taking root, so we can kind of see if we can get these coming back. It's a great idea.
Let's talk with David and Anderson. Good afternoon, David.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thank you.
My question is, I have 26 trees that have been delivered today, not knowing it was going to get as cold as it's going to get tonight and maybe tomorrow. My question is, the holes are already dug. What do I do?
Are they bare root, or are they, you know, what kind of trees have you got?
They're 2.5 to 3 inch trunk. And they're mostly oak trees, a couple of dynasty elms, and some Zelkovia. I think I got one ash tree in there.
Do they have soil on the root balls?
Yeah, absolutely. They're root balls.
Hmm. What, have you got any means of protecting them at all in a garage or a barn or anything for a couple of days?
Yeah, we might be able to, yeah.
I think tomorrow night is supposed to get to single digits potentially.
Right.
I would probably put them in somewhere to keep them dormant, you know, cold, but not 9 degrees cold, and try to wait out this cold spell and get to where the ground thaws and go ahead and get them in the ground.
Are they grouped together right now?
Yeah, they were on a flatbed.
Okay.
They came in on a flatbed.
Straw is not, it's better than nothing. Mulch over the top of them. You know, the root ball is the most tender part of that tree, and that's the part that you've got to keep protected. And it, you know, it, if it was in the ground, it would be, the soil would be fine. But above ground, they're going to be subjected to that 9 degrees. So you've got to kind of insulate those for that temperature.
They didn't just come up from the south, did they?
No, they actually came down from Dayton.
Oh, good. Okay.
So they're acclimated to the temperature, as much as you can be. So if I had the whole dug already and I just dropped them in and put dirt on top of them now, would that be a better thing to do than to put them in a garage?
I think it would. I think it'd be much better. You're going to get some. It's going to, that soil depth for that size of a caliper on those trees is going to be deep enough that it wouldn't be frozen solid. And I think that would be definitely. And then you can come back and straighten them up and finish the planting when it conditions are a little bit more favorable.
The buds should be hardy, so I think you'd be better off that way. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what I needed to know. And I should make sure I get plenty of water on them, right?
Well, I don't think you're going to need to worry about that right now. But okay. I'll tell you, good luck, because you've got some work ahead of you.
Yeah,
it does indeed.
Glad I'm not you.
Thank you, David.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
Let's talk with Elizabeth in Middletown. Good afternoon, Elizabeth. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. This is wonderful. I talk to Cincinnati Edition more often than my relatives. I'm coming over for Thanksgiving. I have two quick questions. I don't own my home. I live in a three-story apartment building in Middletown, and there is a very large tree. I don't know the species, but I would call it a gynandomorph. It is, the tall branches actually are a little taller than the rooftop, and it does definitely need to be pruned. I can just, you know, request that or recommend it, tell them that I talked to the arborologist. I just did not know what time is the best time of year that a tree could be pruned, but I assumed it was not during, you know, the spring when the tree is growing leaves. But I would assume, you know, when it's not growing leaves. So what I'm hearing is that you were saying that this is a good time of year to prune trees. Is that right?
Well, did you say the reason for pruning was because the branches are over the building?
It's blocking out all the sun, and a lot of the branches are, the leaves clog up the gutters, and the squirrels love it if they have access to the roof. It should be pruned, and it's fairly close to the building, about 10 feet away. And some of the, even in fact, with this snow we had this past 24 hours, have brought down some of the branches.
I think what I would do is make sure that you contact a certified arborist to have a good look at the tree. Just because it's over the building doesn't mean it should or needs to be pruned. Sure, it causes maintenance issues, but by pruning the tree, you might be causing, additional problems that down the road could cause the loss of that tree and, you know, loss of all the value there that would be more than less than, you know, overcompensated by the loss of or the maintenance that's required there. But, winter pruning is in general the idea. Or at least when the tree is in dormancy. But I think I would have a certified arborist look at that and determine really if the need is there.
And unfortunately, we've only got about 15 seconds before we have to move along. And Elizabeth, I think your other question had to do about when to plant milkweed for the monarch butterflies. Is this a good time to do that?
Collect seed if you've got them. And definitely you want to plant those in the spring of the year, not now.
Peter, David, and Scott, thanks for joining us this afternoon and fielding all these questions. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Peter Huttinger, property manager at Home Meadow Song Farm, Campbell County Horticultural Extension agent David Kester, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturist Scott Berline. Scott's also the chairman of the Taking Root Tree Planting Campaign.